Hello everyone and welcome to JFG tonight. I'll be speaking very slowly and low tonight because I don't want to go too rough on my voice. Yesterday I lost voice during the show, so I had to cut it short. And today I still feel my voice relatively weak. I've been just relaxing all day. I haven't worked on the greenhouse, just tried to recover and did some shopping with Mama JF. Hopefully I can do somewhat of a show tonight, but I will not have my dynamic voice in full swing. I'll try to go easy on my voice, so bear with me tonight. How are you doing, people of the regular chat? There's a church on fire in Moscow, and it seems like one of these events that had affected many churches in France, in other Western European nations, but this one is a big one happening to a country at war. So there are questions raised, although it's not really being covered right now in the mainstream media. Perhaps they will come to the news a little late. But we've seen on social media some videos of a major church in Moscow burning. Seems like a big fire. And the little reports that there were saying the entire church is burning in an open fire. So I don't know to what caused this, what could have caused this, but it seems worrying for the entire church. Look at the importance of the fire. It seems that there are multiple spots of fire, multiple spots coming out in smoke. It's hard to tell just like this if it's a terrorist action, because a terrorist action can start with a very small fire and these old buildings. I mean, this was a church that was consecrated in the 17th century, I believe. So the Church of Peter and Paul, a very old church. They are built, of course, on so much wood and not with the modern things that would normally keep a fire contained. And so it could very well be an accident. Or it could be an intentional act by some pro-Ukrainian, maybe, terrorist, anti-Russian person. These hypotheses are still possible at the moment. All right, Ariel Suarez was saying, finish my exams for this semester, glad to have much more free time now. Oh yeah, that's a good feeling, finishing a semester. It's so out of my mind, it's so far in my mind being at school, but yeah, it was a pain. School is a pain. Yeah, that's what I remember from school. And I also remember that it's useless. Those are the two things I remember from academia. Of course, if I dig in my memory, I can find some beautiful things about school. There were great times, there were great burgers, and it was a time of carelessness, but you have to work so hard for these exams, and really, it should be said to young people, all of this is for nothing. There will be nothing at the end. You'll have better grades, it won't help you on the job market, you'll most likely won't work in your field. You're doing this for nothing, but if you enjoy doing it, Nicholas Petris says burgers. Well, yeah, I mean, in university towns, there's always a very good burger restaurant somewhere. Sometimes it's on the street, sometimes it's integrated to the university, but always an upscale experience for burgers when you go to the university. And so for someone like me who enjoyed burgers and enjoy complexity, I was going always to these high-level hipster burger shops, and with a couple of other students, we were just eating burgers. Ariel Suarez says, I greatly enjoy knowledge, but the extremely overstructured and non-functional way it is delivered is painful indeed. Yeah, it's... It's painful for nothing, because the passion for knowledge is so great, so intense for people who are truly interested in it, that there's a way you could learn most of what you learn in university without the rigid structure. the rigid structure is kind of designed for other brains, for other brains that don't want to learn in a way. It's meant to funnel someone who wouldn't be interested in recording what is being taught and to force them to do so. And sometimes I hesitate. Sometimes, you know, I think, oh, maybe you have to do this. Maybe, you know, the human brain wouldn't be disciplined enough to if it didn't have this overly structured thing. But at the same time, you end up with the university farming another skill than it should farm. It doesn't really prepare you for the world. It prepares you to record factoids, just store them in a catalog in your brain. And sometimes I think there's a lack of, and maybe it's not doable, but there we should think of a way, how do we make knowledge great again? How do we develop a fascination about knowledge? And I had a handful of professors that were specialized in this, but they were kind of rejects of the department. They were seen as bizarre. But there was a biology professor, François-Joseph Lapointe. This guy was making his course an experience. And part of his course actually was to not go to the university and to work through the whole session on a personal project that you would then talk about for 30 minutes in front of the class. So he was basically having the students do the class. And it was through a special project of research that you were doing on a very specific subject. This guy had the doer part to his courses, which lacks so many, which other courses are lacking so obviously. The infamous Wuhan lab recently assembled monkeypox strains using methods flagged for creating contagious pathogens. The Wuhan Institute of Virology assembled a monkeypox virus genome, allowing the virus to be identified through PCR test using a method researchers flagged for potentially creating a contagious pathogen, the National Pulse can reveal. It's interesting because you see a lot of single trick horses in the media. They're trying to pull out the recipe from the coverage of coronavirus and apply it to the current monkeypox virus. And it's interesting, we should consider the possibility that the current monkeypox strain has been created in a lab. After all, if it happened with COVID, it certainly can happen with any other viruses that we're working on. But we have to be careful. There were special circumstances in the COVID case that do not justify a conclusion in the monkeypox case. First, monkeypox appears to have come from the gay community of Africa. I don't know how much research is going on, advanced genetic research is going on in Africa, but I'm pretty sure they don't have the equivalent of a Wuhan lab, where the Wuhan lab was there, it was working on that virus, and the epidemic started there as far as we could tell. Secondly, we have advanced in our genetic knowledge of COVID, and we have found things that genetically seem to have emerged from human manipulation, the furin cleavage site being one of them, where you have the people were discussing doing this in labs, and the virus contains this addition. Those are factors that are extremely balancing the hypothesis toward the lab leak hypothesis. In the case of monkeypox, we don't have these observations. So we should be extremely careful with the right-wing press, which will attempt to say, hey, maybe we can do the same thing that we did with COVID with monkeypox, and they will get trapped. They will be seen as purveyors of misinformation. Let us not drop our scientific standards because because essentially society got fucked by a bunch of scientists 2 years ago, it's not necessarily the case that it will happen again. So let's be careful. And Cindy, who is a member of the audience, has sent me a letter. And it's also calling for this caution. And I wanted to read what she said because she was asking for my opinion. But the thing is, the text that she has written is very informative, and I fully agree with everything that she says. So she says, "Hello, Jeff. I've been a long-term fan of the show. I first saw you when you talked with Thinking Ape, and I remember going through your old Let's Play, trying to piece together your theory of TRP. I've always enjoyed your work and your perspective on issues. I'm interested in hearing your take on a particular problem I've noticed with how people interpret events and planning related to COVID, as well as the current monkeypox outbreak. Initially, people uncovered planning documents related to a simulated global outbreak involving a coronavirus. Many people interpret this to mean that it was planned ahead of time, and that exercise was a dry run for what's to come. I've recently come across documents discussing similar things related to the monkeypox outbreak. I don't believe things are that simple. To assume that these people and think tanks are intelligent enough to plan some sort of conspiracy without also acknowledging that they may be able to predict such an outbreak while theory crafting potential outbreaks is a mistake. The supposed purpose of gain-of-function research is to attempt to engineer in a lab what the next outbreak of a virus might look like. There were already fears about something like the coronavirus due to the previous SARS outbreaks. The start of vaccine development, prediction of an outbreak, and even the supposed gain-of-function research going on may have all been related to this fear and created a sort of self-fulfilling prophecy. That's not to say I don't think there were plenty of groups waiting to take advantage of a situation like this in various ways. However, I think it is mostly a case of them taking advantage of the situation rather than creating such a situation to take advantage of. All of this muddies the waters and makes it hard to understand what really went on. I believe it also leads many people with theories of conspiracy to attempt to see this as some huge interconnected plot when it's not. It's a series of individual actors all working towards their own interest, creating what seems to be a unified effort on the surface. All of that being said, there is a particular strategy that people interested in influencing the world like to employ, that is to seed the idea, sometimes the funding as well, for what, on first look, looks like something unrelated to whatever their final goal is, essentially building a complex machine out of parts that all seem to exist for their own sake. The easiest example of this to research or study is the Huggs Glomer Explorer. I didn't know about the Huggs Glomer Explorer. It was a deep water exploration vessel which was used to recover a Russian submarine. That vessel, along with two others, was started up and funded by the CIA through shell companies. Up until the actual recovery mission, everyone involved believed it was a scientific research vessel. The three different exploration vessels were set up so the best could be selected, allowing unrelated people to try to solve the same problem at once, so the best one could be cherry-picked. All three ships did real scientific work. This helped to disguise what their intended purpose was, both to the Russians and the people working on them. I don't think it's possible to rule out this kind of thing happening with the coronavirus situation. This would also mean most theories of grand conspiracy would fail to draw correct connections. This is because on the surface level, there is no connection. It is only a potential deeper level, which will likely be impossible for a normal civilian to figure out that these plans took place. Just looking at all the actors who seem to be working in concert will tell you nothing, because those actors had no knowledge of any plan. They were all just doing something they believed needed to be done in and of itself, not something part of a larger whole. That is a beautiful description of what happened with COVID. There were people who were doing genetic gain of function research, and there were people who were farming these viruses. And this is the kind of evidence that I want to affirm. It's a lab leak. I want genetic evidence. I want evidence in the functioning of the virus itself. That's how we will know it's a lab leak. And also, if you have journals of scientists, or you have whistleblower scientists coming out saying, hey, that looks like a virus we were working on, that's the kind of evidence that qualifies for a lab leak. But from there to say there was an organizational desire and an institutional funding to create the pandemic, that is another thing. You can very well fund something because you think it's going to help, and then, as you say, it becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy. By trying to help, you create more problems. And I think it's the best description of what happened with COVID. Now, as far as the planning events, a lot of people you'll see on BitChute, you'll see in the alternative press, people will keep bringing these actors who are playing out institutional scenarios. And as it turns out, they caught many people who had documents and sometimes had, in fact, live role play games in which they were talking about a future coronavirus pandemic. That is not evidence for the fact that the coronavirus was caused by humans. It's neither not evidence for a lab leak. Whenever you look at a piece of evidence, you have to ask yourself, what is the simplest thing that could explain this? So the simplest thing that could explain that there were actors that were that were coordinating for a pandemic to come is that there were a bunch of economic forces that decided that no matter what would be the next pandemic, they would surf on it. They would use it for a political project that has many components to it, from modifying people's individual rights to using social pressure, mob phenomena, and the force of the state to influence individual decision-making. 3, push for a kind of therapy that could qualify as genetic therapy, or at least close to genetic therapy, in that we have modified people's RNA content rather than DNA. So these things were interests that were in place, and the fact that there were actors and institutions producing documents just shows that people were really ready for not only the pandemic happening, but for developing a political response to the pandemic. And it's down to also changes to the economic sector. I would add this as 4. Not just the political things that were done to us and the extortion and the overstepping on individual rights, but there was the whole conversion of the economy to a socially distanced economy where Amazon rises and the small businesses on the street starve. All of this, I can picture a bunch of billionaires wanting this and being ready for any pandemic. The fact that the pandemic that did this seems like it could have been generated by humans is at best suspicious, but certainly not conclusive, on the idea that those people who wanted to benefit politically and economically caused the lab leak. Those are 2 separate ideas. And it's very hard for the general public, as Cindy points out, to hold 2 ideas in their head, and 2 ideas that are bizarre, and not connect them together. The natural human reflex is, if there's two weird things that happen, they have something to do with one another. But it might be that the COVID stuff was a there were two bizarre things about it. That one, there was an accidental lab leak. Yes, that we should review and we should change our ethics code and our security measures and just our perception of how science is always good. We should definitely change these things. But the other weird thing was the whole moral panic that developed around it and the entire political and economic consequences of it. And that's two things that may not be related at all, but they matter, both of them. And you're right, there's just no way you can convince the normies to process this in their head. What they like is show me a BitChute video with weird music around it and how everything is bizarre and it's all interconnected. You are a good thinker, Cindy. I'm super glad that there are quality people like this who watch this show. Like she's saying, I've been watching you for years. And I've also had someone else contact me recently and say he's employing people on my Discord. So because he knows that basically this community is formed by high IQ people. And he's been having very good experience at hiring people on my Discord. And he's like, you've gathered a bunch of high quality people. That is extremely great to hear. I'm happy about this. Lix sent a super chat. Thank you so much for supporting the show. By the way, if you would like to support the show, use the dollar button under the regular chat. And Odyssey is my favorite platform for super chats. So they have a credit card option. Alternatively, you can use Entropy. The link is in the description below. I always respond to super chats. Lix Meg says, rediscovered you via your Full House appearance. My four-year-old son is fascinated by your audiobook. We approach it from a Catholic perspective, and it has brought great theological ideas out of him. Wow, I'm super glad. Super glad that a mind of 4-year-old can be exposed to the revolutionary phenotype. I mean, it makes me wonder what the future looks like, you know? Maybe someone like your child or your child one day will be a biologist, and these people will rise into adulthood having been exposed to the revolutionary phenotype. That's a warm feeling to have. He says, question, do you have a favorite retro game released before 9/11? My God, that's specific. And he says, all the best, sir. I love retro games. Of course, I don't think you can play it still, but I really loved the Dota that was originally on Warcraft 3 Throne. Now you can play Dota 2, which is basically just an improved version, and they took it out of Warcraft 3 and they made a whole game about it. That was definitely something that I enjoyed. If I go back to retro, I mean, the Marios are very good. When I was young, yes, Sigeram, I did play GoldenEye 007 on Nintendo 64, but that was with a bunch of four friends. We were always playing four at a time, and you had the TV split in super pixelated small screens, each of us having our small screen part of the TV. One game that I really liked is Command & Conquer 1995. And Command & Conquer Red Alert a couple of years later. Those were great strategy games. The little pixelated soldiers, I remember, just moving your soldiers to the other base, and it's like, you shoot, but it's like a pixel of red that shows. Command & Conquer was great on Windows 95. And one day I actually... I bought a PlayStation 3 and I installed Linux on it, and I installed QEMU on my Linux installation on the PlayStation 3, and I succeeded, believe it or not, at installing Windows 95 on my QEMU installation on PlayStation 3, and then I succeeded at playing some Command and Conquer straight on the PS3. That was one of my great realizations in life. I spent a full week preparing for this, and I fit somehow a Windows game onto a PS3. so that was a great game. On PlayStation 1, I remember Gran Turismo 2 being a great game because you could tune your car, and they had all of the regular cars. You know, I didn't want to race a Formula 1. I wanted to race a Honda Civic against a Hyundai Accent. And Gran Turismo 2 had that kind of stuff. Gran Turismo 2 is a great game. More things in the classics. Final Fantasy 3, Final Fantasy 2. I mean, yeah, that's... those are great games. You can play Final Fantasy 2 and 3. You can cry. It's a whole movie that plays in front of you. Then Final Fantasy 7, Final Fantasy Tactics. That's all good. I've played a lot of Nintendo game also. Mario Bros. On Nintendo. Mario Kart 64, probably the best. Civilization 2, I really like. Now, if you start with Civilization, I guess you can get the most recent one, 4, 5, or 6, or whatever it is. But to me, I've never experienced the fun that I live when I play Civilization 2. There's no, nothing comparable. Another old game that is good is Heroes of Might and Magic 2. Very good game. You have to get habituated to the system of gaming, but once you feel it, it's really a relaxed game. And I've spent hours on this. What else? I said Mario Kart 64. Super Mario 64 is very good. you know, I've played Atari also. The Olympics game of Atari with the classic joystick where you had to do this for 10 minutes so you could win the marathon. That was insane. What's this game where you have three players and Secret of Mana? Secret of Mana is excellent. Lodazal says, Odyssey app live streaming is broken. I can only chat. Okay, well, sorry about this. So you can join us on desktop as soon as you have access to a desktop. Yeah, so I think I made the round of the great games that have influenced my life. I think I mentioned most of them. Ariel Suarez says, if you're into retro turn-based game with top-notch music, I would recommend the Lufia series. Okay. I mean, there's also other games that have been found to my young heart, but I didn't like them as much as those that I just named, and I forgot many of them. But, you know, there were these insane adventure thematic games when we were young. We were playing this on Pentium 4, Pentium 5. Or 486, you know, like Larry goes to the casino, or that kind of, I don't even remember the names of these, but and many of them. One early game that was extremely scary was for us. We were young people and we had never seen video on a computer. Leisure Suit Larry. That was Leisure Suit Larry. My God, we were getting this game. There were like 10 versions of it. And oh my God, is that a it's a low life game. You're kind of a gigolo of some kind. That was insane. There was this game that brought video to the computer. That was insane. Phantasmagoria. And we just couldn't believe there was actual actresses. And we were like, what the fuck is happening? We were loading this. It came on 4 CDs. And you had to change the CDs as you were progressing to the game. We were playing this on our Pentium 5. Yes, so many games have influenced my life. Raised Fist says, Jeff, try the latest Larry. Wet dreams don't die. Of course, there are the shooter games. Doom, and the Unreal also. You guys know Quake, Half-Life. Those are not games that I've been playing much. But I played Doom. And I played Unreal. Yeah, so great. Dead Star sends a super chat, and he says, shout out to Hangover Easy, the best hipster burger joint on the Ohio State campus. Those are good memories, JF. My favorite was the whole burger. Ingredients: grilled Ohio ground beef patty, red onion jam, house-made cheese spread, bacon and bacon aioli, lettuce, tomato, plus a sunny side egg. It's crazy what you get in burger joints at universities. If there's anything good about the university, it's this. Yes. Oh my god. Why are you guys bringing me such moving memories tonight? Well, let's have a look at the news. National Teachers Guide advises against the use of parent, male, female, mother, and father. In academia, there have been growing controversies over language guides and usages, including the use of pronouns that some object to as a matter of religion or grammar. Now, the largest association of science teachers in the world has issued a guide for anti-oppression terminology for science teachers. In the guide titled Gender Inclusive Biology, a Framework in Action, the National Science Teachers Association has called for gender inclusive biology, which includes the abandonment of terms like parent, man, woman, mother, and father. There is a full attack on heterosexual reproduction. The insane thing in this world is that you'll have detailed description of homosexual actions. They'll be like, oh yeah, you can get your dick in that person's ass. And we'll be able to see the full detail of the homosexual lifestyle. But we cannot have the basic recognition that human beings are produced by the heterosexual lifestyle, which requires a male and a female, a mother and a father, two parents in the end, two parents of the opposite sex. And this is where you see that this entire progressivism scam is not what it claims to be. It's really not a progression in giving more education to children. It's confusing children when it comes to confusing children when it comes to heterosexual lifestyle and detailing the homosexual lifestyle. We have to go back. I don't even object to homosexuality being presented to people as existing. Once they are in age to understand, and without an activist component to it, there's no problem. But don't hide the heterosexual lifestyle. The heterosexual lifestyle is made of mothers and fathers. And by the way, they remove the word parent. That's a weird one, because parent is already a gender-inclusive term, and it in fact includes, even because of the legal situation of adoptive parents, it actually includes adoptive parents. So what are you talking about, removing the word parent? you are in a fight against the intergenerational transmission of knowledge and what's needed for these generations to continue. You're ultimately in a fight against parenthood and heterosexuality, not against discrimination and bigotry. People are saying, JF, have you talked about the shooter? I haven't talked about him yet, but if you want, I can. 14 students, one teacher killed after Texas elementary school shooting. Shooter is dead. He was killed apparently by the police. The suspect is 18-year-old Salvador Ramos. He is an American citizen, so I've seen some misunderstanding in the early reports on this. And on 4chan, people were discussing that he may have had problems with the border patrol. But he's an American citizen, so it's true that the border patrol were somehow he's got into a conflict with the border patrol. But it's not because he was an illegal migrant. I don't know why he got in conflict with the border patrol. Perhaps they were just acting as policemen and they were just in Texas at this place at this moment. I don't know why the border patrol was involved, but he is an American citizen. And it seems that before going on this shooting spree, he killed his grandmother. And then went to the elementary school and killed, they're saying 14 students, one teacher killed. That's the current count, at least. I don't know if there will be more people dead as people get carried to the hospital. But I don't have any idea of the motivation. It doesn't seem like it's a... It doesn't seem to me like it's a white supremacy shooter. And we'll see. Some people are speculating that he will be framed as an incel shooter. 18 years old is pretty young. He's an 18-year-old Hispanic. It's pretty young at 18-year-old to already become an incel shooter. So I don't know what will be found as the motivation, but also he's dead, so we may never know. Warg Washington, yes, I am speaking slowly today because yesterday I couldn't finish the show because I was my voice is extremely weak. And someone says, Entropy says I'm offline. I'm seeing myself online, so I guess you have a connection problem probably on your side. But it looks like, yes, the Entropy page is working. So yes, 14 kids, and this is an image of the shooter in action. He seems to have targeted a specific class, but I don't think... I'm going to increase the volume here a little bit. I don't think... I don't know. I don't know if he was pursuing that particular class or he was just looking for victims and kind of picked them randomly. I have no idea. Fred Nunez says, does JF read this chat or no? Usually just not responsive early today. I'd be resting my voice if I were him. The more he speaks, the more irritated the vocal cords get. Yeah, some people would take a further break, but personally, I don't mind. You know, it's okay to run a chill show, and it's important for me to be on the internet every night so that people are on notice. Hey, there's a scientist with a theory which has not been addressed, not read by Heather Hying, not read by Brett Weinstein. And they are there talking about evolution in science. They are there talking about what we should do for the next big step of science. And they're not reading it. And it's time that people on Twitter, you know, the Richard Dawkins of this world, read The Revolutionary Phenotype and let me know what you think. That's why I want to be on the internet every day. Blue Checks, furious after Henry Kissinger, says Ukraine should cede territory for peace with Russia. So Henry Kissinger said, "I hope the Ukrainians will match the heroism they have shown with wisdom." Kissinger warned an audience at the World Economic Forum. Oh yeah, so the WEF is ongoing. The WEF, the Globalist and the Great Resetter are all chilling together in Davos. And he was saying, you know, the Ukrainians should do some territorial concessions. I fully agree. And this is what the president of Israel told them. This is what I told them. There's people across the across the spectrum. One moment. There's people across the spectrum just highlighting how ridiculous it is to pursue this war, for which there is no sign that you'll be able to reconquer solidly obtained areas like the southeast of Ukraine, like the Donbass, Luhansk region, Donetsk, Luhansk region. Soros is also at the WEF. I mean, I barely understand what he's saying. I can't believe that this guy is a leader of the world. Who decided that this guy was a leader of the world? Just the fact that he made lots of money on the markets. Anyways, he has an opinion on how Ukraine has taken the attention and the rest of our Great Reset project has been put on hold, unfortunately.
The invasion of Ukraine didn't come out of the blue. The world has been increasingly engaged in a struggle between two systems of governance that are diametrically opposed to each other: open society and closed society.
Of course, he's presenting Russia as the closed society. Listen, our societies are not opened. As soon as you use your freedom in this society, you will be faced with cancel culture, attacks on your bank account, attacks on your business. People have developed algorithms on YouTube to decide what you think. And they're making a lot of money. They're among the richest people because there's lots of demand for population control. And Susan Wojcicki is also at the WEF, by the way, talking about how the fight against misinformation is the great challenge and they're tackling it. So we're not in an open society. We are in a closed society that brags about being opened.
Let me define the difference as simply as I can. In an open society, the role of the state is to protect the freedom of the individual.
The state doesn't stand for freedom anymore. The state is an impediment to freedom in those so-called open societies. The state is full-on part of the war against private liberties. I mean, down to vaccine, medical liberty. We are stepping over everything. And this guy is still in his 60s mindset. Yeah, America is freedom. Yeah, Russia is bad.
In a closed society, the role of the individual is to serve the rulers of the state.
You mean like those people who are being asked to forego their medical liberty for the benefit of all? Is that happening in Russia or it's happening in Canada and in the US? It's happening in Canada and in the US. Justet says, "I thought JF spoke slow. Soros is slow motion times five compared to JF." Yeah, sorry guys, you have a poorly speaking host who's presenting to you a poorly speaking person in George Soros. But yeah, so I mean, this is just a bunch of globalists getting together. George Soros is not sharp at all, unable to think, unable to talk at this point, so he's just going to spout the stuff that makes him a globalist. Susan Wojcicki was at the WEF.
Transparency report. The second one would be really raising up authoritative information. So if you are dealing with a sensitive subject like news, health, science.
A sensitive subject like news. This is what Susan Wojcicki describes as the motivation behind her complete transformation of the YouTube business into a monopoly for the CNNs and Fox News of this world. Because when I started being a YouTuber, the algorithm was treating us fairly. Well, if there was something you would like to hear about JF, the algorithm would send you to JF. But Susan Wojcicki has decided to turn this into her own cartel. And to justify this, she calls news a sensitive subject. If news are a sensitive subject, then we are justified in redirecting all these viewers to people who will cover this in a sensitive way. And of course, the globalist who's interviewing her is like, she's salivating at the idea of more censorship. Have you made sure that you'll remove everything that needs to be removed?
Science, we are going to make sure that what we're recommending is coming from a trusted, well-known publisher that can be reliable. And you know, if you think about how Google works, it's very similar. Like if you type in cancer or you type in COVID, what you're going to get are going to be names that you recognize. They're not going to be someone that just published a web page yesterday. So it's very similar with regard to how we handle that on YouTube. The third is making sure that we, if there's content that's borderline content that technically meets our policy but is lower quality, that's content that we basically will not recommend to our users. Our users could still access it, but they will not recommend it.
The concept of borderline content, this is all very old stuff. This is all what Susan Wojcicki started doing 3 years ago, which totally killed YouTube. And at this point, why would I stay on YouTube if I get the same thing on another platform, which is that the people who really, really love me and who really are willing to click on a link to get to my stuff will do so. If they're going to click on a link, I'm not going to have them click on a link to these globalists who are coordinating the control of the public mind. And no one will ever hold these people accountable for what they get wrong, for what the mainstream discourse gets wrong. And this is how, you know, early in the pandemic, a lot of the things that first got you banned from Facebook to YouTube turned out to be true. No one is going to hold Susan Wojcicki accountable for this misinformation, but someone should. Dead Star sends a super chat. Thank you so much for supporting the show. He says, Georgia primary today. Let's hope the anti-Dominion pro-American Secretary of State and Attorney Generals are victorious. Sadly, Georgians will be giving Republican camp, who aided the Biden steal against Trump, an easy victory. The camp vote is strong because Georgians are terrified of Stacey Abrams. I don't know much about Georgia, but it seems like a place I wouldn't want to live. I think they had some Republican victories in there, but I think it's inevitable that Georgia will be dominated by Democrats long term. Doesn't seem like the last stand of liberty. It seems like Georgia is a terrible state, and I wouldn't want to live there. But yeah, the primaries, I've not been following them with much interest, because what's the best that can happen from the primaries? That we'll see how strong Trump is in influencing the people who get picked. Okay, but Trump is not a solution to the problems of America. If Trump was a solution, he would have implemented that solution 2 years ago when he was the president, and 4 years ago when he had the entire Congress on his side. So I'm not super excited at the idea of oh my God, will Dr. Oz win in Pennsylvania because he got an endorsement of Trump? If you got an endorsement of Trump, you've got an endorsement from someone who demonstrably cannot help America. I mean, if we get Trump, we might get a small economic boom and perhaps excitation on the stock markets and perhaps lower gas price. That would all be great. But there's not going to be a major change in the political direction of America. And there's going to be an even bigger slap back after Trump does his stuff. So I'm not super excited. And I don't think that the America First movement has any penetration power into the politics of America. As I said, I was listening back to my 2019 millennial interview because people were accusing me of being a black pilled on that interview. I was right all the way. The kind of far right or whatever you want to call it has totally got crushed. And I knew it because I knew that the America First and the far right in general wouldn't be let to succeed in society. So the Republican Party cannot help us. The Democrat Party cannot help us. I see that there's a guy named Hexadecimal on the regular chat who's he's chatting in hexadecimal. He's saying 43.6F. I'm going to have to decode this to see what it means, because if he violated the rules, hexadecimal to text converter. I'm gonna audit this hexadecimal dude. X numbers to hexadecimal. Ah, well, he just chatted the word communication. So he's trying to establish communication in hexadecimal codes. Guy from V says the autism trap. Yes, this guy is at another level than us. He's like, I'll only communicate in hexadecimal. And my first word to them will be communication. Like, oh my God, the levels of self-reference here. Dead Star sends his super chat. He says, the primaries are the only way to stop globalist election theft by Dominion and friends. I mean, this whole discourse around election theft is not very productive. If you don't have the political will and mean to change that state of affair, I don't see much power in the Republican Party to undo. I mean, the Republican Party in many states was the one in charge of the election. They were the ones who have let the COVID crap become an excuse for the Democrats to advance their progressive project, including loosening the voting restrictions. So it's, you want me to be excited at the idea that the very people who got fucked by the Democrats, including Trump, Trump was the first to fully endorse the vaccine, not understanding that his Republican base was fundamentally different than him, that they were excited at his old tweets that were making links between autism and vaccines. And I'm not saying there's a link between autism and vaccines, but there was something in Trump that was representing an absolute medical liberty, and he totally fell for the promotion of the vaccine. He got booed recently at one of his speeches because he listed it as one of his big accomplishments. Listen, there's something wrong here. There's something wrong that will not be fixed by having Republicans in power. And Mama JF was adding, to the advantage of getting a Trump presidency, there would be some memes. That is true, Mama JF. we would be doing good here in business, because when there's a Trump presidency, there's a triggering happening that generates infinite amounts of content for every news show on the internet. Meanwhile, the conflict between Russia and Ukraine is progressing, slow pace. There was some missiles sent from the Belgorod region in Western Russia that seemed to be headed toward Ukraine. So those were sighted at night. That's from Russia's Belgorod region. A barrage of enemy fire filmed in Luhansk. They call it enemy fire. That's the Ukrainians, of course. So those were artillery being sent by the Russian side in a Luhansk region. So again, you can see explosions up to very distant parts here. So that's the conflict continuing in the southeastern part of Ukraine. We've seen helicopters flying also in this region, flying very low and shooting missiles. Those are Russian helicopters, at least that's what's reported. And two other news before we conclude the show. I'll go continue the resting of my voice. Letter from a U.S. supplier of industrial chemicals. I have never seen anything like the current supply problems. In his latest weekly letter to client, One River Asset Management, Eric Peters attached a letter that a small U.S. supplier of industrial chemicals sent to all its customers earlier this month, in which they apologize for their 70% price hikes. Dear customer, I hope that you and your business are doing well. New price sheets are enclosed. I have been working at XXX Industries for over 50 years. I have never seen anything like the current supply problems. It's unbelievable that this supply problem just showed in a delayed way from the COVID crisis. You know, the businesses have been shut down 2 years ago, and now we have all these supply problems emerging, and the fuel doesn't help. Of course, the fuel price comes in, and maybe these supplies exist, but they cannot get to their target destination anymore, or they get there at a very high price. So it's shocking what's been happening to our society. I wonder if the young people of the future will even know how available things were, how you could dream of anything and get it on Amazon, and the stores were filled with stuff that people didn't need, but they were still buying it. I think that the era of surplus and abundance is over. Stunning images. Another problem here of the supply chain. All of these accidents. Stunning images show potash train derailed in Canada amid fertilizer crunch. Look at the train. Totally wrecked. This was carrying potash, so the third component, you know, I believe that the three numbers that you see on a fertilizer, the first is nitrogen, the second is phosphorus, and the third is potash. And it's what my plants need, because the soil that I had when I started the greenhouse had a deficiency in potash, and it's a very important component. So hopefully this doesn't cause further issues in the farming sector, fertilizer, and everything that flows from it, which is basically our life, depends on it. That is it for tonight, boys. I did my best to make a 1-hour show, and we're almost there. So I'm happy that my voice is at 50% now. I'm sure it will be fixed tomorrow. Tomorrow we have the regular show at 7 p.m. Eastern Time, and then I'll be on the Crucible to debate Synth on the question of moral nihilism. I'm sure I will trigger all of you Catholics in my audience and moral realists. I know that you guys don't like it when I say that moral nihilism is true, but it's true. So I'm going to take the side of truth in that debate. Bye-bye, everyone, and much love. Thank you.